Good morning, welcome to Backchat. I'm Hugh Jewett and your co-host today is Karen Coe. Karen, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Hugh.
A poll of young people carried out earlier this year suggests that they are very pessimistic about their economic prospects, with a massive 87% expecting the gap between rich and poor in Hong Kong will grow. And income disparity has increased since 1997, with a Gini coefficient last measured at 0.53, very high by world standards. There is more money around. In the past decade, Hong Kong's gross domestic product has grown by about 50%, but median household income has risen by only 10%. So what's behind the wealth gap? What part does it play in, for instance, the umbrella movement last year? What part do high property prices play in this? And do you think the current political system is making things worse? Is the wealth gap simply a result of low tax and the solution simply more tax? Email us with your thoughts, questions and comments. Our address, backchat@rthk.hk. You can go to our Facebook page, Backchat on RTHK Radio 3, and comment there, or call us 233-88266, 233-88266. After 9:20, what to do with the original HMS Tamar. We have with us this morning Richard Wong, Chair of Economics in the School of Economics and Finance at the University of Hong Kong, also a member, I think, of the newly formed Path of Democracy, David Webb, who's a shareholder activist, founder of website.com, and Peter Wong, Executive Director of the Lion Rock Institute. Not that Peter Wong, another Peter Wong. Also with us is Professor Mo Pak Hung, Associate Professor in the Department of Economics at the Baptist University, and our email address once again is backchat@rthk.hk. Richard Wong, first of all, let's hear your diagnosis. Why is the wealth gap so big in Hong Kong?
I think there are two things that one must separate. One is rising measured income inequality. Income meaning the take-home pay and interest and dividend income. Wealth is somewhat very different, and for the vast majority of the population in Hong Kong, wealth is measured to a large extent in terms of housing or property they own. The rising disparity of wealth, which is today still not properly measured, I'm not aware there have anyone has attempted it, but that is a serious problem. The growing income disparity is much less serious. The rising wealth gap stems from one very simple fact. For over 20 years, the share of the households in Hong Kong that own private property has been pretty stagnant, around 50%. And at the same time, housing prices have gone very high, you know, runaway price inflation. That has created the huge wealth gap. Of course, there are a much smaller percentage of people who own other forms of wealth. The income inequality, the Gini coefficient which you measured, has increased. And that is not surprising for various reasons. We have an aging population. We have rising divorce rates, a lot of single-parent households. Hong Kong today is top seven in the world in terms of divorce rates. And we have growing single family single-person families. All this has contributed to rising measured inequality in incomes. Furthermore, stagnation of median household income is not a unique Hong Kong phenomenon. In the United States, median household income has been stagnant for 20 years. That has things to do with education policies, investment in human capital, particularly among low-income families, and the changing nature of jobs that are available in the modern economy. I'm much less worried about income inequality. I'm very worried about wealth gap differences.
Okay, thanks for that clarification. But isn't it anything to do with income tax? You haven't mentioned income tax.
Can I just jump in and get the facts straight? Sorry,
yeah.
David Webb.
Okay,
here. Good morning.
Good morning.
I hate to blow up the main thesis of your program and, you know, give us nothing else to talk about.
You won't be able to.
You're quoting the wrong figures.
Yep.
The Gini coefficient that you mentioned is before social transfers. It's before things like public housing, work incentive, transport subsidies, CSSA, all sorts of payments.
This is the government's line.
Well, if you want to ignore the payments that the government, on behalf of taxpayers, gives to poor people, then let's not give it to them at all, because, frankly, it does count. It does make a difference to their lives, and it does have a very big impact on the Gini coefficient. And if you allow for all of those things, and the government has been spending more and more of taxpayers' money on these things in the last 10 years, then you will see that the Gini coefficient after that has been the same in 2011, the last time they mentioned it, 0.47, as it was in 2006. When you also allow for the fact that there are more and more retired people and look at the economically active population, then, in fact, the Gini coefficient in 2011 was 0.43, and it was lower than it was in 2006 at 0.436. So, in fact, the income gap narrowed between 2006 and 2011, largely because of things like this, and also, of course, because of legislation on minimum wages, despite the reduction in average household
size. You're saying
it's
not real, because Richard Wong seems to be saying it's real.
Well, he's wrong.
That's correct. I do not disagree with David Webb. I'm just taking the Gini coefficient and trying to
explain
it.
You're taking the 0.53 number, which is before all of the good things we do.
Even
for
then,
poor
it's not a real concern, because it's about changing household composition
and aging, as you pointed out. Yeah. And I agree with you on this point.
It's not a real concern because it's about demographics.
No, there's also a statistical effect of, because households have become smaller in the last decade or so, they've shrunk from an average of 3.2 to 2.9. That when you measure the distribution of household incomes and look at the gap between the straight line and the curve.
I think some people would say that you're both ignoring the screamingly obvious, which is the low tax rate in Hong Kong. That's what causes the income disparity in Hong Kong.
No, it doesn't.
That's why you can, I mean...
Goodness, we collect far more in taxes than we pay out in benefits.
Nothing you've said is relevant to an international comparison. These demographic issues apply to many other countries, many other developed economies.
The figure in Singapore is 0.478 in 2012, and it's 0.463 in 2013. It's almost the same as Hong Kong, basically, and this is after all of the good things that we do for people on low incomes. And you can't ignore that fact, because that is part of the overall social equation of whether...
And the tax rate in Singapore?
And the tax rate in Singapore is very similar to ours.
Yes.
And your point is, let's just tax people for the sake of it. But we have surpluses. We have surpluses coming out of our ears. Okay, we have $300 billion extra dollars collected by accident by John Chang.
This is
who can't
straw man,
budget
David.
Straight.
No, come on, listen, you're not worthy of that. Come on.
No, you're not worthy of these socialist arguments. I mean, let's be very clear about it. We can debate whether you want the gap to be even narrower, and that's something we can debate. Do we want to be more like Sweden? Scandinavia generally, do we want to take away incentive from people tax them at higher
rates?
So they are different.
You admit they are different.
Certainly they're different. But what kind of society do we want? Do we want one that rewards hard work, that gives people opportunity?
I thought you were saying that the Gini coefficient told a lie. I mean, that the figures we were given were misleading.
Your thesis is that the wealth gap and the income gap is widening, and that is blown up by the statistics from the Census and Statistics Department. I mean, it just simply isn't widening. It's narrowing slightly. It may be high, and you may want to debate whether that is too high, but it is not widening.
And there's another issue, though.
You're saying it's
stagnant. There's the wealth gap, which is a completely different issue. Mm-hmm. The wealth gap is directly related to housing.
I don't think that's a problem, though. You're saying that it's a problem that the 50-odd percent of people who own their own property are getting richer because of the value of the property. Now, in terms of quality of life, they're still living in the same property.
That's not true.
Hasn't got better.
No.
It's just got worth more because of the bubble.
It's not just that it gets worth more, because if you actually own your property, it's an asset that you can refinance, and therefore your choice options is much larger. The unhappiness of the vast majority of the younger people in Hong Kong is that they have no access to such an asset, which could be a life-changing event as their careers develop, as they begin. You see, much of the Pearl River Delta's economic growth in the 1980s and the 1990s was probably financed by property price increases in Hong Kong, because banks in China were not lending to Hong Kong investors in Hong Kong, and Hong Kong banks were not lending either. So this, having an asset is an enormously important issue, which I think the...
I would disagree that we're in a property bubble. It will correct at some, when the interest rates...
I don't think funding is a problem. Now if you have brilliant ideas, you can raise your money.
You never have brilliant ideas brilliant enough to convince a banker.
Furthermore,
if you try to raise funding on the stock on via newer methods, via internet, it doesn't work because of regulations that prevent it from being successful.
I
can share my experience when I went to Beijing a few months ago in Zhongguancun, which is similar to the Silicon Valley in San Francisco, but the Chinese version. The young people, they are gathering there in the incubators. They share ideas, and then they can raise funds to develop their application apps, iPhone apps, whatever that is. And they can raise, of course, it's not too abnormal to raise over a million or even ten of millions.
Because China is more deregulated than Hong Kong.
Are we talking about financing SMEs? Are we talking about income disparity?
But the other thing is, if I don't have a brilliant idea, my brightest idea is to open another 7-Eleven store, but I'm very poor, how am I going to get it off the ground? There's no amount of innovative financing that can help me, and that is why assets is important. If you take a look at Singapore, 90% of the people are homeowners, which is very significant, and the wealth gap creates a lot of frustration. Now, with some of it may be perception, but that doesn't matter whether it is perception, because people still feel unhappy and without their own property. And I think this is a very serious problem. Right. And property bubbles are not going to be corrected, largely because of regulatory barriers that exist in land and housing development that prevents new supply from coming forward. This is happening in every major city in the world. The politics in all those cities prevents the ease of supply of housing being built. That's why everywhere it's just escalating.
Okay, Mopak Hung is with us. Say from the Baptist University, Professor Mo. Good morning to you. Let's put this to you that there is a lot more money around. As I said, the GDP has gone up about 50% in the last 10 years. Median household income has risen only by about 10% over that same period. Where's the money gone? It's gone to the rich people. Is that another way of talking about wealth and income disparity?
Yeah, I think the issue can be divided in several ways. Mm-hmm. One is that inequality income distribution. Another issue is inequality of wealth distribution. And another is inequality of well-being distribution. I think the divergence is, as David Webb said, it is the inequality of well-being distribution is not so severe because of the government transfers. And however, the inequality of wealth and income distribution, I think, do widening over time. However, there are two reasons for that. One is our tax structure does not change according to the external environment. They change rapidly in recent decades, and our tax structure never changed. Mm-hmm. Changes.
What's changed in our external environment?
One is our wealth, particularly the housing wealth, just increased drastically due to the open door policy of China, and then we have the RMB become more and more internationalized, etc. And under that situation, the wealth value just increased drastically. However, our tax on income and profit never reduced to encourage the ventures, the innovative ventures. And then the success of innovative ventures is one of the key source of income for the middle class. And therefore, you can see that the middle class income just fall behind The increase in the GDP.
So for example, putting a capital gains having a capital gains tax or some tax that would capture the rise in asset values would encourage innovation because you wouldn't get rich. You wouldn't just have to sit on a property.
For many years, I always said that in order to cope with the external changes and increase the mobility, the social mobility of people, a key problem in Hong Kong is the social mobility of a youngster is just lowering over time, even though our GDP and wealth just increased drastically.
That's what we're talking about. Right.
So my suggestion is we should reduce the income from productive activities. Now, when you are open a factory, employ labor, and do production, in fact, you are contributing to the whole society. However, you are subject to tax, although it's not very heavy, but still, and over time, it doesn't reduce it a little bit. And in fact, when there's inflation, the tax rate is increasing because the tax step doesn't change. And another is
for the salary. 16.5% on profits. Yeah.
For the salary tax, we contribute. Well, suppose I study very hard, and then maybe have some luck and become more on average, higher knowledgeable than the others. However, I contribute, I still have better tax. But if I buy some houses or inherit some houses from my ancestor, I just sit there and do nothing and contribute nothing to society. My wealth just increased drastically along with the income.
No, if you rent out those houses, you will receive income which is subject to profits tax or property tax.
I said it's too low.
Our system doesn't encourage productive work. It just encourages accumulation of property.
That's correct. That's correct. We should reduce.
That is nonsense. I'm sorry. There are 3.9 million people working in Hong Kong productively and paying tax if they earn enough and not paying tax otherwise. I've argued for higher personal allowances and a flat rate of tax above that so that nobody pays more tax than they do already and that we iron out the inefficiencies in the system. But we certainly don't need to collect more tax than we're already collecting given that we've been piling up surpluses at the rate of $300 billion per 5 years. That money has been extracted from the economy and stuffed into reserves, and it should be left in the economy so that we can all be more prosperous. If you're shaking your head and saying that we should somehow just siphon off more money from the economy and leave it with less resources.
No, you misunderstand my point.
That's nonsense.
My point is tax rate is not an issue. It is the what kind of taxes is an issue. We should tax those free rider incomes.
So you want to tax people
and just reduce at the same time reduce the taxes.
Well, why do you call it free rider? If you have property that you rent out, you pay tax on the income.
No,
if you run a business, you pay tax on the profits. If you don't make a profit, you don't pay tax. So there's nothing inconsistent about that. And if you're saying we want capital gains taxes, you're saying that when people who build up their SMEs sell them, they should pay capital gains tax on that. Why? Because they've already paid tax on their profits. Why should they have to pay tax again?
Peter Wong, what's your take on this?
Well,
who should we be taxing?
Well, I would like to go back to I'm even more radical. Is that I think we should accept the fact that in the world that there are income disparities and also the wealth gap. I mean, this is natural. but I agree with Richard in the sense that the wealth gap is more a problem rather than the income disparity. But my take on the wealth gap is not because Hong Kong we have problem with our land regulation or land regulation on land use. It's about quantitative easing. If we talk about why the wealth gap is increasing, it's because of Ben Bernanke and Janet Yellen. Even Ben Bernanke now, he has to write in his blog to defend, no, I didn't do anything to increase wealth gap. So this is something Hong Kong can't control because...
Well, we can. We can increase tax. We can adjust the tax. That's what we're talking about.
Well, the problem is too much money printing.
That's how they do it everywhere else in the world.
If the problem is too much money printing, why would taxing the rich would solve the problem?
How would taxing the property... No, are you suggesting that you actually take money from people who own property without selling it?
They are not free riders. They want to protect their wealth because their wealth is being diluted by the Federal Reserve. So they're smart people. They just don't want their money, their cash in the bank get diluted and invest into property. Why would they be penalized? Why should they be penalized?
No, they should tell me. It's not a question of being penalized. It's a question of being fair.
Well, that's a problem. You see, in a globally integrated world, you cannot impose tax in one place without all the wealth leaving for other jurisdictions.
Exactly.
Unless you can't get the whole world to do that at the same time. Yeah. Now, that's one point. The other point is, I've always been very much simply in favor, not everyone agrees, and that is, if the problem is a wealth gap, and if it is primarily an issue with housing, I think a very simple answer is for government to give away very cheaply or sell the existing public housing stock to the sitting tenant at a heavily discounted price. That will, in one fell swoop, have no cost on government, because, in fact, they will probably gain something in terms of revenues from the sale of some of that property, and create a vastly more equal society in terms of wealth distribution.
It would be a disaster.
I think you must be very mistaken because I have, in my lifetime, argued for this for almost 25 years. I see only two groups of people opposing. First, government officials in the housing department, and two, NGOs whose career is tied to the fact that Hong Kong has 35% of the population being slaves to the housing system. They become their constituencies.
Okay, hang on. Why would it be a disaster?
Now, currently, the property market can be divided into two sectors. One is the property housing sector. It's those who cannot care about himself or herself, and then take care of a poor family, and then as an income transfer, so that they give more time and room to move upward, promoting well-being, equality. However, for those who live in private housing, in fact, they are paying the tax for using the land. They lease out the land. The property developer lease the land and then release to the private housing sector. So this two group of supply of the property, now you say that net the public sector own their own property, property owner own their property, and then the property can be treated as a private housing. Under that situation, the private housing sector supply will just increase drastically. You can see that 50% of them live in the public housing sector. The result is the private housing sector just collapse.
Why would it collapse? I don't quite understand.
Well, the supply just increased drastically.
Where's the demand?
Where's the demand, yeah.
Why do you think that demand-supply balance would change? I mean, people would be newly enriched by this windfall.
It would create
questions about how future public housing applicants would be dealt
process,
with.
Under self-selection process, the public housing resident is very different from those private housing residents. The public housing resident, by self-selection, they have a very high discount rate. For the private housing resident, they tend to save and have a low discount rate about the future benefit or future income.
I don't know what you mean by self-selection. They didn't choose to be poor. They are poor, and they are qualified for public housing.
That's not correct.
They should be tested more often on that point, not just 10 years after they move in, because people are socially mobile.
So they do improve their incomes. Under that situation, they would just sell it for short-term enjoyment.
And then where would they live exactly? Because there'd be no public rental housing left. So you're suggesting they would sell their only home and then live on the streets?
Mm-hmm. Well,
is that what you think they would do?
Why some people are poor? Some people are always drunken? Why some people gambling? Because people are different.
I don't think that.
And for the poor people,
by
self-selection, they tend to be high discount rate.
I cannot believe it. That you're saying that the poor are depraved.
People are different.
The poor are sick. Poor are depraved. Poor are immoral. Poor are irresponsible.
Rich people can be alcoholic too.
Rich are moral. They save. Whereas the poor dissave. I think the difference is, if you make the poor own their property, even if what you believe is correct, they will become low discount rate people. They will become very responsible. They take care of their asset. They will change their behavior.
Poor people largely don't save because they can't.
But this is what Margaret Thatcher was trying to do 30 years ago in the UK, and it doesn't work because there is always a need for social housing. There is always another generation of people who need the council houses, and if you sell off the council houses...
That's a different issue. The different issue is... That's a different issue. Does that mean the government should not continue to build more housing for the poor?
That is a separation.
They don't need to build.
The
worst thing about the public rental housing system is that it creates ghettos because it puts all the poor people in designated blocks in certain locations. What we should have instead, and also it means that they have to commute a long distance to a lowly paid job somewhere else, and then we have to give them subsidies for that, and the whole thing gets more complicated. Instead, what we should be doing is privatizing, selling off the public rental housing, and giving everybody a rental voucher to pay the fair market rent for a unit of that size.
It wouldn't work.
And then we'll recognize the true cost of the public rental system, because currently they're only paying $1,000 each. Let's give them a voucher for, say, $10,000 each, which is the actual value of that unit, and let them rent a unit anywhere in Hong Kong, whether it's owned by one of the newly privatized owners of former PRH, or a private unit. They would all be private units. Okay, we could create giant-sized REITs for investments, which would own the former PRH and receive the rents. And we would give everybody the vouchers so they can move around Hong Kong and live nearer their jobs.
You're both saying there should be more social transfer. The government should be more generous.
No, because that would be maintaining the existing level of transfer, but voucherizing it and making it more portable.
Should just
be more
efficient.
So that people don't have to live only with poor people in ghettos, with some of the social consequences of that.
Couldn't you achieve the same effect by making the rich people pay more tax?
Why? It wouldn't get you will not make the poor empower
rich people paying more tax.
Privatizing public housing empowers the poor.
Why do you need to raise more surpluses, Hugh? I don't see what exactly you're trying to achieve there. What we can achieve by voucherizing and privatizing the PRH and stopping the government's involvement in building all these things is a more mixed society where people live nearer their jobs, side by side with people who can afford to pay private rents. We assess them more often instead of once every 10 years, once their income has risen because of their rising success in their employment, then we take away the benefit.
Okay, we got a break for the news. We'll be back. We're talking about the wealth gap, income disparity and wealth disparity in Hong Kong. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Drop us a line, backchat@rthk.hk. The weather hot with sunny periods in the next couple of days, a few showers towards the weekend, mainly fine and hot today with a couple of isolated showers as well. 29 degrees at the moment, relative humidity is at 79%. Welcome back. This is Backed Out on a Tuesday morning with Karen Coe and me, Hugh Chewerton, as your host. We're continuing to talk about income disparity, the wealth gap. We have with us Mopak Hung, Associate Professor in the Department of Economics at the Baptist University, Peter Wong, Executive Director of the free market think tank, the Lion Rock Institute, David Webb, who's a shareholder activist, founder of website.com, and Richard Wong, Chair of Economics in the School of Economics and Finance at Hong Kong University, and also a member of the newly formed Path of Democracy. You can email us, backchat@rthk.hk, with your take, your analysis of the cause and repercussions of the wealth cap. Later, we're also going to be talking about HMS Tamar with the former director of the Maritime Museum, what to do with what's been found at the bottom of the sea. Lots of interesting emails I'd like to share with you as well that we've got so far. Thank you very much indeed. Backchat@rthk.hk. Get them in now, please, or call us, as I say, 233-88266. Caller Dennis off-air said he'd like to make the point that most people in Germany are not homeowners. They rent property and save money. They then set up their own business, which I guess goes back to the point that we were also making about how people are tempted to live off property in Hong Kong. Tom raises another interesting point that I wanted to get round to. Tom says, as our fantastic chief executive already told us, the Hong Kong people who earn $14,000 or less per month should not have a say or any political power. Are we surprised that wealth gap is growing? Do you think the wealth gap will be any better soon without even the most basic income redistribution via a fairer tax system? This is why our youngsters are fighting for genuine election and political reform in Hong Kong. In addition, our wonderful motherland is led by the CCP that believes in consumerism, extreme capitalistic industrialization, and alienation of all the Chinese factory workers, with the wealth gap much worse than Western capitalist and democratic countries. God help us, poor Engels and Karl Marx, and how naive we are in trusting human nature. That thought comes from Tom. Thank you very much indeed for that. Richard Wong, what about that point? The chief executive didn't exactly say that people who earn $14,000 should not have any political power, but he's saying that it should be that
if the nominating committee was representative of the general population, that's what you'd get.
Yes, they would have more political power. Yeah,
and populist policies.
Things are set up exactly. Yeah, to minimise that.
But this rather begs the suggestion that he's saying that he's not already indulging in populist policies, in which case, why is it that everybody over 65 gets to travel for $2, including rich people? Why is it that he dishes out money left, right and centre through rebates, electricity subsidies, work incentive transport subsidies, introducing or furthering the minimum wage and so on?
Why?
Because
they don't make any difference.
Well, why? Because he lacks an electoral mandate, so he has to be very nice to the poor. I mean, I don't think there's any evidence that if we had a representative nominating committee, which we don't, if we did have one that broadly represented the population, I don't think that the government would be more socialist. I think that we would be able to elect a government that pursued free market policies that made Hong Kong successful in the first place.
Especially if we have over 90% property owners in the electorate. And that is why it's very important that one should not think of democratization in which everyone is a slave.
I don't think you have to be a property owner to be a capitalist. If you believe in opportunity and success and you don't yet own property, you will still believe in a capitalist form of administration. Yes. And Germany, for example, has a free market economy largely, despite having less than 50% home ownership.
So. But Germany is a slightly different case. But let me come back to Hong Kong, because you started a question is, I have no interest in defending whoever the chief executive in terms of what he wants to say. What is critical is this topic is about wealth distribution. And we have discussed quite a bit that there is income disparity. But that is not a very major problem in Hong Kong. Simply because even if you have suppose we tax the rich, it will not make the poor wealthier. And even if you redistribute income, incomes is about, the measure of income as a ratio to GDP under any reasonable interest rate, let's say 5%, is 5% of wealth, right? It's not going to make a big cut.
We can all be equal if we're all willing to be poor, because if you impose 100% income tax above your desirable threshold, then there'll be no incentive to earn more than that. And we can go back to communist China or USSR or Cuba or any of the places that have tried central planning with equal incomes and realize that then all incomes will be equally poor. On the other hand, if we want opportunity, if we want capitalism, if we want prosperity overall and the ability to help poor people from the incomes that rich people earn, high-income people earn, then, we stick with the free market policies that made Hong Kong successful in the first place. And then we redistribute and reduce that Gini coefficient from 0.53 before those distributions to 0.47 afterwards. We maintain our universal education system, universal healthcare system, and the social safety net. And that gives people the confidence to take risks, to start businesses, to further their education and train.
But I thought, when the Baptist University survey sees that people, young people, think they cannot become wealthy. And every survey we have seen in the last 5-6 years has always
No. You're it's another straw man. We're talking about income disparity.
Listen,
the young people were asked about the gap between the rich and the poor. That's what they're concerned about. There are consequences of that gap because people feel that they're living in an unfair society. Well off they are, they see that there are a lot of people who are getting a lot more well off. There's a widening disparity.
Is the disparity income, or is it wealth? That's the point.
It's both.
The crucial issue is there's a huge confusion about this matter. You see, the disparity is wealth, not income. You see, that is the issue of deep concern in Hong Kong.
But I think the young people feel like however much they earn, they can never become wealthy because the only way to become wealthy is to own property in Hong Kong. And on the incomes that they're on,
they have
to live with their families till they're 35 years old and married with two kids.
The way to become a lot less wealthy.
200 square feet. And they can never become wealthy in the Hong Kong definition because they save enough to own their own property.
I think the way to become a lot less wealthy in the next 5 years is to own property. Okay, I think that, and then the young people who don't yet own it will say, at last I can afford to get onto the ladder, and I have some Chardonnay and Freud about the people who held onto the property and lost 40% of its value when the interest rates went up. You know, there are swings and roundabouts on that, and we are in a housing bubble, and the government made things worse by cutting off the land supply 5 years ago, or 10 years ago under Donald Trump, and only recently
but
reinstating it.
Even if we're in a housing bubble, the prices are still going up.
Yes, that's what happens in bubbles, but eventually things will correct.
Are you just saying people
there
just need to
wait? There is a huge amount
wait.
Of supply, a record amount of supply coming onto the market just at the time that interest rates are going to be going up next year. Okay, we're setting ourselves up. The government has set it up because of its stop-start policy on land supply for quite a large correction in valuations.
Okay, here's a couple more emails. This is one from Bowen, who says, the growing income disparity is largely due to the lack of adequate growth and at times a decline of incomes after the handover, which were in turn caused by an abundant supply of graduates, the opening up of China and the transfer of sovereignty in 1997. As these are structural causes which are here to stay, it appears that remedies will have to focus on accentuating Hong Kong's existing comparative advantages as opposed to seeking to enhance advantages that it has not enjoyed hitherto. Or at least the priority should be first to focus on enhancing the former and then selectively pursuing those in the latter which have the best chances. The political system has very probably made things worse precisely because rather than entrenching and furthering our traditional advantages, it's done exactly the opposite by increasing government intervention, economic planning, reducing the traditional incentives for innovative entrepreneurship, and even cutting back on our traditional strengths of clean government through too much merging of Hong Kong and mainland values and practices, even in the top echelons of government, and weakening our rule of law through urging for so-called cooperation between the three branches of government. Calling for Hong Kong further to adopt the values and practices of the mainland so the authorities up north will agree to grant Hong Kong more freedom is not only naive but positively dangerous. Rather than focusing just on maximising our personal economic gains in the short run, we should take a longer perspective while also seeking a friendlier dialogue with China, as Ronnie Tong suggested in Hong Kong Today earlier this morning.
There's another big factor in the income disparity. And you know, I think we've done pretty well to maintain it at flat levels of post-distribution Gini coefficient, given that 1 million people every 20 years are entering Hong Kong.
That's, sorry, flat, not, this is flat by your standards. This is flat,
flat after all the things we give people, yes. The income that you don't want to count, okay? The CSSA payments and things like that that don't really count. It can't be spent in some way. That's what you're saying.
Okay.
So I like to count those and say that after that, it's amazing that the Gini coefficient actually hasn't got larger, given that people are coming into Hong Kong under the one-way permit system at the rate of about 1 million every 20 years. And largely they are unskilled, low-income people who have to be accommodated within the social system that we have. So as fast as we are making old Hong Kongers better off and educating them and they're moving up and getting better paid jobs, we're having to bail out the boat with a big hole in it, basically, low-income people arriving from mainland China.
This measure that you're using, is this the David Webb
index? It's 150 index? Per day this under is, the one-way permit system.
No. This measure of the Gini coefficient which you're citing, it's not the one the government uses.
Yes,
it's not the one the Hong Kong government uses.
Yes, it is.
Go to the
Census and Statistics Department website and look at the press release, Hugh, because I'll email it to you afterwards. They say that we should, of course, adjust for the money that
exactly.
we give to poor people.
Exactly. They say
you
we should
just
adjust.
Look
No. Because I've seen this, yeah. They say we should adjust. But the figure that is quoted, the figure that is an international standard, is increasing.
No, the international standard is post-distribution. Everybody makes allowance for the fact that we do redistribute money. And you're complaining that we should redistribute more, but you have to start with how much do we already distribute?
Okay.
Because otherwise you're saying let's not count all the cash that goes into poor people's pockets from rich people's pockets already.
Okay, here's some more comment. This is from Henry on our Facebook page. The wealth gap is only a symptom and reflects, one, wealth in Hong Kong is mostly related to property and the high land prices is the leading cause. Two, the narrow choice of types of career opening. Three, in this age of discontinuity, companies have very lean structure and career advancement and the related salary advancement is not easy and demands hard work and other reasons. The wealth gap does not precipitate the Occupy Central movement, which is political, not social in essence. Youth do not fully understand the fast-changing business world and when asked often cite the widely quoted wealth gap as a cause for numerous issues. The political system has no strong relation to the wealth gap. Legislators go to where they are the hard way, and professional demand on them are hard. Low-calibre people just cannot survive at the top echelon through connections and greed. Levying tax is no solution. I think the solution lies in A, reverse the Highland price policy. B, youth must look outside of Hong Kong, say China, where countless projects are going on. C, Hong Kong must stop talking and act fast to widen by whatever way its industrial base. Denny says Hong Kong's situation isn't that different from other developed economies that have little room for growth. There are the haves, such as land developers, big corporations that sell things to mainland tourists, and people who bought properties when it was relatively cheaper. They want to maintain the status quo. Then there are the have-nots, like young university graduates, who don't have a huge inheritance to make a down payment for property. No matter how hard they work, they can never own property, get rich. They want changes in the rules of the game. This isn't supposed to be a political issue, but everything a government does is always a political issue. This is what you get when the government is unelected and is only accountable to 1,200 people, most of whom belong to the haves. A democratically elected government would never allow things to get this bad. Peter Wong, is this problem caused by politics? What's the relation to the political setup in Hong Kong?
No, I don't think so. Mm. Well, if you look at even Western democracies, I think one point when we try to compare the Gini coefficient of Hong Kong to the democratic countries like the US or Germany is unfair, because we are comparing a city to a country. So that's why I believe it's very misleading to just look at Gini coefficient. If we take a look at the Gini coefficient in Hong Kong comparing it to New York, I don't think the figure is so worrying. Mm-hmm. So it has nothing to do with the democratic setup in Hong Kong. I think the young people, when they complain that they don't have a way to get rich, they should study more economics. They should just study Richard Wong, read his books,
and say
it's because it's simple. Because the wealth gap that we are experiencing is just because of too much money printing in the States as well as in China. I think that's just that simple. Of course, if we increase land supply in Hong Kong,
that would alleviate
the problem. But if you have too much money going after the same amount of commodity, then the commodity, the price of the commodity would go up. It's simply demand and supply.
A couple more emails I would like to get in. Mary says, most folk are owning only fractionally more than they did 20 years ago, but rent and home prices have tripled. It doesn't take an Einstein to work out that an ever bigger chunk of the annual earnings of the majority is ending up in the pockets of a minority, says Mary. Phil B has a...
Actually, rents have not kept pace with land prices. The yields have dropped to record lows, basically. And that's an important point, because that's not supporting valuations at all.
That's irrelevant. We're not talking about the relation of rent to land prices.
Well, she said that they tripled, that rents and land prices have tripled, and that's not true.
Okay, what did she say? Rents and land prices have tripled. Well, the point is in comparison to income, the income has been very stagnant over the last 10, 20 years.
Yeah, but as I said, you've got a low-skilled labour force entering Hong Kong with a million people every 20 years coming in. And people get paid for their skills. I mean, ultimately, in a free market, you pay people for the work, the productivity that they can add. Yeah. So you have to... realize that that's one of the reasons that
Mary's point
overall
for the third time. Mary's point is just that the incomes have remained stagnant. Yeah. People are not earning more, but prices of fundamentals like homes and rents have increased a lot. That's true. That's manifestly true.
That is manifestly true. But what is the problem, though? Is the problem tax the rich and pay the poor? You would not solve it because the poverty, you would have to understand what is the source of this poverty. This poverty is a combination of many different factors. First, we are getting our education policies is not investing enough to uplift the poor quality of the migrants that we are receiving. 2, divorce rates are rapidly rising. They are top 7 in the world. This is incredible. It has never experienced it. We have literally moved to a situation where increasingly almost a quarter to a third of youngsters will grow up in a single-parent household. This has been shown to be extremely detrimental to skill building, to upward social mobility. Third, almost all of them are heavily concentrated in the lower income in the public housing estates.
So how do you address that?
Richard, a lot of those divorces are probably of mainland wives who've come here under the one-way permit system and didn't really want to live with their Hong Kong husbands.
That's not true. Data does not show that to be the case. A mainland husband, mainland wife, of course we have. Mainland wife who comes to Hong Kong, try not to let go of their husband. This is their critical and sole asset. Right. Whereas the divorce rates are significantly higher.
But once they've been here 7 years, they'll qualify for all of the.
That's not true. Even data doesn't show that.
And they're creating.
Those are largely heavily reported in the media because they're news stories. But they are not statistically correct.
But could it be the case people get divorced because they could get two units instead of one unit?
That's also some case. That's not the overwhelming evidence. That cannot be the overwhelming evidence. Divorces of convenience.
They're actually still trying to live near each other because they love each other very much but want two housing units.
I think divorce is always a costly option for all parties involved. It's not a money-saving option.
It's very affordable if you have no money. It's affordable if you are a low-income household because there's no asset to divide.
Yeah, you just go along, file the paperwork, and then apply for the units.
You see, Hong Kong is recreating poverty in the public housing estates through divorce, and because we have a reasonably generous welfare system.
So what would you do, though? Would you have divorced couples live together still?
No, I cannot do that. What I would like to do is to give those people living in public housing estates a housing asset, so that there is some cost to divorcing, because they would have divided up.
So, I mean... Right. It's not crony capitalism. It's not the political system which is set up to minimise the political power of poor people in Hong Kong. It's not the functional constituency.
Oh, no, I will criticise crony capitalism.
It's not the property developers. It's the poor people living in... It's the people who get divorced.
There would be more opportunities. No. Hang on. Look, there would be more economic opportunity, particularly for business startups, if we had a functioning competition law. We still don't have a functioning one. And if we didn't have the cartels that dominate the election committee.
Okay. Here's a quick solution from Phil in an email, Phil B, who says, tax dividends. Then many of the rich who pay little or no tax contribute to the tax revenue. Here we go again.
Let me explain this really clearly, okay? Dividends come out of profits after tax, after they've already paid 16.5% profits tax. If you try and tax the dividends of a small business owner, he will just simply pay himself a much larger salary instead, which is deducted before the profits tax is calculated. Okay, so you have to keep the net rate of tax on profits similar to the rate of salaries tax. And if you try and impose double taxation by taxing it again when it's distributed, you just end up with people avoiding the system.
Mopak Hung, do you agree with that? Most places in the world, as you know, places in the world tax dividends.
I want to bring up some main points that are overlooked in general. About the political system and income inequality, I think there's no causality or correlation between the two variables. I think for a good political system, it's key about means, whether it is means or for ends. I think political system, the desired political system, is a means for enhancing social mobility and self-actualization of the community members. So therefore there can be many, many different kinds of political system based on their cultural background, historical background, etc. So there's a lot kind of the true political system or whatever, true democracy or whatever. So therefore, when we want to devise a political system for Hong Kong, we have to see which political system can enhance the social mobility of the community members. What kind of system can enhance the self-actualization chances of the community members? And if a society that can enhance social mobility, a society that can enhance self-actualization, then the society will just prosper forever. So therefore,
You're describing Hong Kong in the 1960s, 70s and 80s when prosperity and self-reliance was the main theme. And it worked. So let's go back to that and not talk about raising taxes for the sake of it and redistributing the money for the sake of it. But give it to people who actually need it.
Okay, we're out of time. We could maybe return to the topic on another occasion. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed. A quick email from Elizabeth who says, sorry, what about the lack of social security, lack of pensions and healthcare that you get in other democratic countries and cities? Hong Kong government continues to have a huge budget surplus but is failing the majority of the population who can't afford to feed their kids. Politicians are ignoring the fact of children in the city who can't afford to eat three meals a day. Are you going to tell them to read up on economics? Asks Elizabeth. Thank you very much indeed for those comments. Thank you very much indeed to Richard Wong from the University of Hong Kong, David Webb, shareholder activist, Peter Wong from the Land Rock Institute, and Mo Pak Hong from the Baptist University. Thank you all very much indeed. Wanted to turn finally